This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12, man's second landing on the moon. Today, the descent and landing on the lunar surface by astronauts Charles Pete Conrad and Alan Bean aboard the landing craft Intrepid. Astronaut Richard Gordon will be alone in the command ship Yankee Clipper, orbiting some 108 kilometers above the moon. In just 16 minutes from now, at 4 hours 16 GMT, the landing craft Intrepid will undock from the mother spaceship Yankee Clipper. This will begin a series of events that will take the Intrepid to the moon's surface by 6 hours 53 GMT. The Voice of America will be bringing you continuous coverage of all these events, from undocking to touchdown on the lunar surface. Apollo 12 is now in its 13th orbit around the moon, some 107 hours and 38 minutes into the flight. For our first status report, we go to correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
Apollo 12 astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are in the lunar module in their spacesuits, preparing to disconnect from the mother ship. And within minutes, they will begin to go through the first maneuvers necessary for them to descend to the surface of the moon. That should come just about 14 minutes from now. The undocking, and then a very slight radial separation maneuver by the mothership, Yankee Clipper, the command module. Dick Gordon alone in the command module, who will stand watch overhead in lunar orbit during the 32 hours that the Intrepid, the lunar module, is on the surface of the moon. All is in readiness. We have heard no communication whatever from the spacecraft during the last half hour. That's because the astronauts are all quite busy. In the Mission Control Center, at least two full teams of flight controllers are on duty at this very moment. Eugene Kranz, the chief of the Flight Direction Division, is in the number one seat as flight director. And Jerry Griffin, the prime flight director for this mission, is also standing by. All of the men are in readiness for the separation, descent, and touchdown to the moon by Apollo 12 to begin in just about 13 minutes from now.
The Voice of America is continuing its live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12, now 107 hours and 41 minutes into its mission. That coverage will continue following this brief summary of late world news from the VOA newsroom.
In the headlines, Apollo astronauts are getting ready for a landing on the moon. U.S. and Soviet negotiators hold the first working session of strategic arms limitation talks, and the U.S. says recent contacts with Hanoi have failed to produce any progress. The news in detail. Apollo 12 astronauts Charles Conrad and Alan Bean are making final preparations inside the lunar lander Intrepid to undock the small craft from its mother ship Yankee Clipper and head downward for manned second landing on the moon. The undocking procedure is scheduled to begin at 4 hours 20 Greenwich Mean Time and will be completed half an hour later when the two spacecraft separate to go their separate ways. Yankee Clipper will continue in lunar orbit with astronaut Richard Gordon at the controls to await rendezvous with the ascent stage of Intrepid on Thursday afternoon. American and Soviet representatives held the first working session of preliminary talks on strategic arms limitation in Helsinki today. The meeting at the U.S. Embassy lasted 90 minutes. No statements were issued after the talks. U.S. Secretary of State William Rogers says there have been numerous diplomatic contacts with North Vietnam, including some since the death of President Ho Chi Minh. But Mr. Rogers said the contacts have failed to produce any progress toward a settlement of the Vietnam War. A group of African and Asian nations submitted a resolution to the United Nations Assembly calling for an investigation and report on what they called violations of human rights by Israel in occupied territory. Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan said that the activities of Arab guerrillas in Lebanon threatens that country's sovereignty and integrity. And General Dayan warned that Israel would take measures against the guerrillas inside Lebanon if they attack Israel from bases on Lebanese soil. A joint Libyan and Sudanese communique says the upcoming Arab summit conference will be a positive step in massing Arab resources to defeat Israel. The conference will be held in Rabat next month. The Department of Defense has disclosed that a preliminary investigation last August failed to reveal any evidence to support charges that an American infantry unit killed 467 unarmed South Vietnamese civilians. The Defense Department noted the earlier findings, but said the case remains under urgent investigation and that South Vietnamese officials are cooperating fully. An American Army First Lieutenant and an enlisted man are under charges in the case. Former Indian Railroad Minister Ram Singh says that 61 Congress Party members of Parliament have united in a group opposing Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, and he says he expects 10 more members will join the group soon. Dispatches from New Delhi say Mrs. Gandhi has the support of a majority of Congress Party members of Parliament. On Monday, Congress Party members and other members of Parliament defeated a motion censuring Mrs. Gandhi. Ghana's finance minister, Joseph Mensah, said West Germany will help his government work out plans for combating Ghana's unemployment problem. Mr. Mensah made the statement at Bonn at the end of a three-day visit. He later left for the Netherlands and will also visit Japan. The Ghanaian finance minister told newsmen that West Germany would also continue its financial support and consult Ghana's other creditors about rescheduling outstanding debts. The Economic Policy Committee of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development met in Paris to discuss its members' national economic policies. No official communique was issued at the first session. But President Nixon's special representative, Paul McCracken, told newsmen the basic question at the session had been measures in the United States to combat inflation. That's the news from the Voice of America, Jim Hamilton reporting.
From the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, and from Apollo 12, circling the moon, the Voice of America is bringing you live coverage of man's second landing on the lunar surface. I am William McCrory, one of your hosts on this worldwide broadcast. I'll be joined here in Washington by my VOA colleague Norman Guerin and by two experts from NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. They are William Land, Apollo Missions Engineer, and John Hammersmith, Senior Systems Engineer. At the Manned Spacecraft Center, you will hear, of course, from correspondent Rhett Turner. In just about 8 minutes from now, we'll have the undocking of the lunar landing craft Intrepid from the command module Yankee Clipper. Astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean have been inside the lunar module for about 4 hours, making final preparations for their dramatic descent to the surface of the moon. About half an hour after the undocking, astronaut Richard Gordon will fire the small rocket thrusters, the RCS, of the command ship Yankee Clipper, separating it from the Intrepid by about 3.9 kilometers. Then, about an hour later, the lunar lander Intrepid will fire its big descent engine for the first time for the maneuver DOI, descent orbit insertion. This will place the Intrepid in a great looping orbit with a low point, or perisenthion, of only 50,000 feet, or about 15,000 meters. Then, about an hour later, when the lunar landing craft reaches that low point of 15,000 meters, astronauts Conrad and Bean will begin the final 11 minutes of powered descent. Once again, they'll fire that big descent engine in a braking action, taking the ship down to about 7,000 feet, or 2,200 meters. We call that high gate. Then on down to 500 feet, or 152 meters, at low gate. At that point, astronaut Conrad will probably take over manual control of the descent to the lunar surface. And now, Norman Guerin, if we have time, would you give us the broadcast meter bands for this worldwide transmission?
The VOA Apollo 12 broadcast can be heard in Europe on the 19, 25, 31, 41, 49, and 75 meter bands short wave, and on 1,734 meters long wave at 6 hours GMT, 251 meters medium wave. In Latin America, on the 19, 25, 31, and 49-meter bands. In Africa, on the 25, 31, 41, and 49-meter bands, shortwave. We can be heard in the Middle East on the 16, 31, and 41 meter band short wave, and on 238 meters medium wave. In South Asia, on the 19, 25, and 41 meter bands. This live broadcast of Apollo 12 can be heard in East Asia and the Pacific on the 16, 19, 25, 31, 41, and 49 meter bands short wave. Those are the broadcast bands for the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. At this point, I'd like to reintroduce our NASA experts, William Land, Apollo mission engineer, and John Hammersmith, senior systems engineer. Bill Land, in just a moment, the command module and the lunar module will separate by what is called a soft undock. What does this mean, and why this procedure for Apollo 12?
Norm, the reason we're performing what we call a soft undocking as opposed to the normal type of undocking that we had last time, which I guess you could call a hard undocking, is in order to give us less impulse to the lunar module in its delicate orbit about the moon. We found out last time on Apollo 11 that in the undocking maneuvering, the lunar module imparted some velocity to its orbit and caused it, this is one of the reasons that the lunar module landed long, approximately 4 miles longer than had been planned and off target. This time we're performing the undocking maneuver without thrusting the lunar module. And in fact, we're doing it by easing the latches off, those latches that hold the two vehicles together, and then having the command module pull away with very fine thrusting maneuvers, very delicate maneuvers. This then hopefully will leave the lunar module in its orbit without disturbing it in any way.
Well, John Hammersmith, do you have any fears about this upcoming maneuver? Any possible hazards as we begin the first of the maneuvers that will take us down to the surface of the moon?
Well, Bill, I don't think we've got very much to worry about the undocking. I think the suspenseful moment will come when we get down toward the actual landing.
And we make the first firing of that descent engine.
That's
well,
right.
We're now about 3 minutes away from undocking. And let's go back now to the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
We're listening to the conversations between Pete Conrad in the Lunar Module Intrepid and Dick Gordon in the Command Module. They are go for undocking. They received the go for undocking about 5 minutes ago. And we got a four-minute time hack, and Pete made a comment. We're standing by for anything that comes from Mission Control. The noise you now hear on the line with us is the radio signal coming from Intrepid and Yankee Clipper in orbit around the moon. The astronauts have been quite busy for the last half hour or so. They've been in the lunar module for almost 4 hours now in preparation for the separation and descent maneuvers. Everything is going perfectly. All of the instrument systems aboard both spacecraft have been functioning exactly as ordered. The combined craft of Apollo 12 arrived at the moon exactly on schedule. Dick Gordon's performance of the service propulsion system burns have been exactly right with very little error at all.
Roger.
We should.
That was Conrad who said Roger to a comment from Dick Gordon.
We should have television pictures, should we not, soon?
We're getting live television from the surface of the moon right now.
Okay, Dick, I'm with you.
We can see on our monitors one of the thruster quadrants on the lunar module.
47 at 1 minute 30 seconds.
He's going to do a program P-47 in 1 minute 30 seconds, he said.
Mark, there you go, 130.
130.
Okay, and then I'm going to dial up a verb 77 and stand by on the inner as soon as you release me.
Uh-huh. That's Pete talking to Dick Gordon, who's going to release him or disconnect. We can see the lunar module out the hatch of the command module window on the television screen. This TV coming back live from the moon, and we understand it is being transmitted to many parts of the world right now through the Foreign Broadcast Service pool. Many of you overseas possibly can see this while listening to our VOA broadcast also. When the...
It does look kind of good.
Pete said something looked kind of good.
I see you with your landing gear down for a change.
There it goes.
Roger.
I believe that was a movement of the television camera. It has not undocked yet. Dick Gordon said, I can see you with your landing gear down for a change.
About 15 seconds to go, I guess, for undocking.
Preparing for the undocking maneuver, we can see the limb in the shadows and one of the quadrants of the thrusters. 5 seconds. The command module should back away very gently. That's Dick Gordon making a comment there. It's not very clear. There it goes. The command module has undocked.
Okay.
There's just
here
a...
you go again.
Yankee Clipper is now separated from Intrepid.
Back off, Dick.
That's Pete Conrad telling Dick to back off. They're trying not to impart any sort of motion to the lunar module.
There he goes. I just wanted to wait, let that damp, Pete.
Dick said he wanted to wait and let it damp.
Okay, I got minus...
backing off.
I got minus one and nothing, so forget it.
Minus one and nothing.
It looks good.
Pete Conrad saying it imparted no velocity, no movement at all to
the tube,
lunar module. How's
real
the tube?
Real good, Dick. Real good.
Jerry Carr in Mission Control.
Okay.
Saying the tube or the television
okay,
looks
Dick,
very good.
Yawn left 60.
Dick is
Dick
going...
Pete, you're cutting it out to me. Roger, go off bot.
The whole purpose of this maneuver was for the command module to do all of the, make all of the motions so that it would impart no velocity change at all to the lunar module. This to ensure a greater accuracy for the descent maneuvers to come. Now the command module is beginning to change position slightly.
How do you read, Yankee Clipper?
That's
okay.
Al Bean.
3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. How's that?
That's Al Bean. Asking Yankee. That's Dick Gordon.
How's that picture, Jeff?
Clipper, Houston, the picture is beautiful.
The television picture, of course, is coming from a camera inside the Yankee Clipper command craft. Mounted in the window.
Dick, we're copying Pete's yaw maneuver now.
Hey, firm. Just about got it completed.
The Yankee Clipper is performing a yaw maneuver.
Okay, Dick, how do you read me? I'm clear now, Pete. All right, pitching up 90.
Clipper, Houston, your FM is breaking up on occasion.
What's breaking up?
Your FM is breaking up.
That word from Mission Control to Yankee Clipper, he says his FM is breaking up, one of the communication systems. The television picture is breaking slightly as we were watching the command module drift back from the lunar module. Now Pete is pitching up the Intrepid 90 degrees.
Give us two and data, we'll start your uplink.
He'll give us...
You got it.
That's turning the control of the computer over to the mission control in order that new information may be fed in. Poo and data. Program 00, P-O-O, and data acquisition mode. That's so new information can go into the spacecraft computer. The reason that the television picture is breaking up very just a bit there, if you happen to be watching, is because the command module is maneuvering very slightly, and it's possible that this high-gain antenna is drifting just a bit. Every now and then you hear Dick Gordon asking Jerry Carr, a fellow astronaut here in the Mission Control Center, as the capsule communicator, you hear Dick asking him, how's the picture? We can see from the eyes of Yankee Clipper, the lunar module Intrepid below.
Difficulty being encountered in locking on with the steerable high-gain antenna on the command module. get a good TV picture and communications.
Our voice of Mission Control tonight is Terry White, the voice you heard there last, and he confirmed our belief that
hey,
there was some problem.
Hey, you look nice over there, Yankee.
That's Pete Conrad, saying you look nice over there, Yankee.
Hey, Dick, you read me?
Yankee Clipper, Houston, how do you read?
Houston Clipper, loud and clear.
Roger.
Hey, Houston,
you
tell him to turn off his box because he's cutting out his own VHF.
Clipper, say again.
Okay, you were cutting out your own VHF being on Fox. Your camera was keying it.
That's Pete telling Dick Gordon that he's cutting out his own VHF communication because his camera was keying his...
I'm off of Fox now, and you're cutting out on me now.
They're having
okay,
to get their communications
that?
Modes...
Okay, that's better. Stay there.
Corrected. This unified S-band transmission of each spacecraft is an intricate thing with very many modes of transmissions.
Okay, you got it on me. I'm not going to touch anything again.
That's Pete Conrad.
Yeah, Clipper, I'll turn on my tracking light for a minute, see if you see it.
That's Alan Bean. Says he'll turn on his tracking light.
Intrepid Houston with a DOI pad.
I've got it, Al. I've got your light.
Dick Gordon says he can see the light.
Okay, standing by.
All right, Jerry Carr is going to give to Intrepid a DOI pad, some figures to use for maneuvering during the descent orbit insertion burn. This goes up by voice. Al Bean acknowledged that he's ready to receive them.
Go, Houston.
That was Bean.
Yankee Clipper, Houston, try pitch minus 7-8, yaw plus 225 on your high gain.
This instruction designed to tell Yankee Clipper how
yeah,
to align.
That's bad, Jerry.
Roger, you're breaking up pretty badly.
That instruction is to tell the command module
Houston,
how to align his antenna.
LEM maneuver, DOI pad. Noun 33. 109er.
And here we go, and this will last for several minutes. It's a long series of numbers which are called pads. Designed to enable Intrepid to manually insert into the computer some of the information necessary for the descent orbit burn. The television has been turned off temporarily while Dick Gordon is now aligning his high-gain antenna back to Earth. You heard the instructions to him on how to pitch and yaw in order to do that. While this pad is being passed up, maybe we can discuss with our friends in Washington some of the things that are happening right now. Anybody care to comment there, Bill Land or John Hammersmith, whom I don't believe we've heard tonight?
Well, I think first I would like to bring up this matter of pinpoint accuracy in the landing of the Intrepid, the landing craft. We were discussing it a bit earlier on. Bill Land, would you carry that a bit further and... give us further information on just why we are making this one of our major goals on this flight.
Well, we're the major goal, or one of the major goals, to conduct a or attempt a pinpoint landing and demonstrate our capability of doing that. This goal was set such that on future missions, when it's required that we go into a very small area because of the ruggedness of the terrain that we'll be going into on future missions, such that we'll be able to do that with confidence. Now, on this mission, we've done a number of things to accommodate this pinpoint landing capability, and they represent changes from the Apollo 11 mission. We touched on one a few minutes ago when we talked about the soft undocking. That was done to impart no additional velocity to the lunar module. On Apollo 11, as you recall, we landed some 4 miles long, and this was due to adding just about a half a foot per second, if you can imagine, such a small increment of velocity. But that's how much was added, approximately two revolutions prior to landing. And there was some accumulation to that over a period of the two revolutions before they landed. This time, however, we're taking precautions to avoid any changes in velocity, and things we've done, we're not dumping any of our wastewater for a period of 8 hours prior to landing. That's four revolutions. That means in the command module, we didn't dump any water, which adds a very, very small amount of velocity, but it does change the orbit. We've also changed our procedures in conducting the checkout of the RCS system, the reaction control system, the small thrusters. We're doing that in a different manner now, such that we don't add velocity, but we just counteract any velocity that we might impart. That is, we would fire two thrusters in opposite directions. The command module, as you noted, in this undocking, did the undocking. It actually moved away from the limb rather than the limb moving.
Well, was there any actual firing of thrusters at that time, Bill? Or was it just a floating away?
At that time, there was a firing of the command module thrusters after they assured that they were safely undocked. Now, this is the reason we call it a soft undocking, because rather than burning the thrusters immediately, we ensure that the two vehicles are not attached. The latches are removed, and the two vehicles stand there together for a few moments until they're sure that there are no attachments. And then the command module does a short burst of its RCS thrusters to move it away.
Well, it was just a short jerk as that undocking was accomplished.
That's right.
John Hammersmith, there was some worry about the solar flare situation as a possible hazard to Apollo 12. How does that look now?
Well, I haven't heard anything about it recently, Bill, and I presume this means that it has been determined that it isn't going to amount to much and have any consequences for the mission.
John, I got,
you got a
some
later
information.
Reading, right?
Yeah, we had a briefing from Dr. Don Robbins, chief of the solar physics section here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, about 4 hours ago about that whole subject. Apparently, a lot of people around the world are very interested in this astronomical phenomena, and the solar flare, which is on the eastern edge of the sun, has sent its energy particles out in another direction, and thus far neither in the astrophysical measuring station here in Houston or in Boulder, Colorado, or on the Canary Islands, or from a Pioneer spacecraft, which is out toward the sun, there has been no significant measurement of any sort of solar radiation. What is called less than one REM, R-E-M, Rentgen type of measurement for man. I've forgotten what the acronym stands for.
Even so, Rat, the vehicles themselves offer a rather high degree of protection to the crew.
Mm-hmm. But the point being made was that this particular solar flare was in no way sending energy in this direction.
Right.
It has been discovered.
Right.
Well, Rhett Turner, you've been on top of the coverage of the astronauts over the past few days since liftoff. We understand that there was some medical problem, a very minor one, a stuffed-up nose for Al Bean today, and I believe on Monday, a problem of some blisters under the biomedical harness for Pete Conrad. What's the latest on this problem?
Well, both of these problems, if you want to call them that, both of these little annoyances existed up to within about 4 or 5 hours ago. That's when we got our last reports from Pete Conrad and Al Bean. And Dr. Charles Berry, the chief flight surgeon, explained them to us. Some of the biomedical sensors, one of them particularly, has caused some irritation on Pete Conrad. He has disconnected his respiratory sensors and is maintaining his heartbeat sensors, and he decided not to disconnect them and move them because he was afraid he might sort of inflame the area where he disconnected them. There was one spot that Pete said looked a bit like poison ivy, and Dr. Berry gave Pete the choice of removing them and moving them to a new spot and rubbing the somewhat sore spots with an antiseptic cream, or keeping them as they were. Pete chose to leave them as they were throughout the EVA and the period on the lunar surface, which was an indication that though it might have been somewhat of an irritation, it was minor. And Al Bean's stuffy nose was quickly relieved by an antihistamine, and the astronauts in the spacecraft have deduced just among themselves that probably it's a slight allergy to some dust created in one of the craft.
Well, Rhett Turner, you have the countdown clock there. I believe we are roughly about 14 minutes away from separation. That is another firing of the spacecraft. That is the Yankee Clipper.
15 minutes, 30 seconds. We're listening to some more information going
on. 2-1, 2-5. Roger, T3, if you're ready.
This is Jerry Carr, the voice, the capsule communicator.
We are ready.
That was...
Roger, T3, TIG, 112-27-4200.
This is some more updated information being given to Intrepid in preparation for that burn. Yes. Apparently Dick Gordon has aligned
the... Roger, I have got a manual on my high gate. It won't stay locked on.
It's nice and steady over there now, Dick. I guess something went wrong with the auto track.
Yeah, it's because I'm in manual. It's staying there now.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Just wobbles a little bit when you fire a thruster.
I believe...
Feedback, Houston, is 112-27-4200.
That's Al Bean.
112-25-00.
That's affirmative, Al.
Dick Gordon says he is maintaining lock with his high-gain antenna manually.
Clipper, Houston, did you try the secondary transponder before you went to manual?
That's affirmative.
Bill Land, is it true that the LM Intrepid will be approaching the lunar surface slightly faster than the Apollo 11 landing module? And if so, is this in the interests of landing accuracy?
In its in the latter stages of the powered descent, which is initiated some 12 minutes before they land, and that's when the descent propulsion system burns at its maximum throttle, to lower the orbit and slow it down to a landing. In the latter stages of that powered descent, it is true that the spacecraft will be traveling faster than we did on Apollo 11. Now, this is done not so much to assist us in a point landing. In fact, it's not done for that purpose at all. It's really done to conserve fuel such that there is more maneuverability available to the pilot when he gets down to the low gate, or about 500 feet when he would take over manual control, and it's for avoiding hazards, large craters, rocks, that sort of thing. It of course will assist the point landing capability if he's within a reasonable distance of the target point when he gets that low.
Well, doesn't that give us about roughly 24 more seconds of hovering time or extra fuel on this flight?
That and a couple of other minor procedure changes do add up to approximately 23 or 24 seconds added hover time over what we had in Apollo 11. That's right, Bill.
What other considerations are there in discussing a pinpoint landing and accuracy, Bill?
Well, I think it would be worthwhile mentioning that I think we talked about the various things that we do on this mission, or what we are doing on this mission, to improve our navigation accuracy. That is the lack of imparting any kind of velocity to the LEM once it's separated from the command module. However, I think it's important to point out that the reason we have to do this is because the moon's gravity is 1/6 that of Earth's gravity, and consequently, very small changes in velocity will change the orbit quite drastically. As I mentioned before, it was about a 1/2 foot per second change in the velocity of the lunar module that caused that 4-mile long landing on 11. So you can see the difference. In an Earth orbit now, a 0.5 foot per second would hardly make a change in the orbit at all. But around the moon, The orbit is quite delicate and is susceptible to very, very small changes.
Rhett Turner in Houston, we can still hear in the background the information being fed up by the capsule communicator to the Intrepid. What is the time hack now on separation? That is the separation, second separation maneuver by Yankee Clipper.
Okay.
We're listening.
Howdy, Pete.
Pete Conrad just asked a question there. We missed part of that. We can still see.
Looks like because of your tracking, Dick, they raised the landing site altitude about 2,400 feet.
That was Pete Conrad saying something to Dick Gordon.
Hard to believe, Al. Looks like it was in a hole to me.
I think there were jokes.
And, Houston, I guess you saw the landing radar self-test that came out 4-0.
Pete,
Roger, Pete, we copied that.
Pete just checked out the landing radar, did a test, and reported it to Houston. Houston confirmed seeing it.
Houston, we'd
telemetry.
Like to get your value on transmitter power on that.
Rhett Turner.
Very clear picture of the lunar module just a few meters away.
Okay, wait, what?
From the command module.
They were both 3.6.
Roger, copy.
A great...
Actually, the velocity X-meter was 3.62, and the altitude X-meter was 3.60.
The nose of Yankee Clipper is pointed toward the lunar module just a few meters away. The television camera is mounted in one of the windows, and we can see the moon going by beneath Intrepid, and the sun shining brightly off the gold mylar film on the descent stage of Intrepid. The upper portion looking very silvery. All of these many sheets of mylar protecting...
Go ahead, Clipper.
That's Dick Gordon calling into Houston.
Well, Rhett Turner, while we're waiting for our next maneuver, which should be coming up in about 8 minutes, the firing of the Yankee Clipper's thrusters to further separate it from the Intrepid, we want to go now to our Voice of America newsroom for a brief summary of late world news.
Apollo 12 astronauts have undocked their lunar landing module, Intrepid, from the mothership Yankee Clipper. The separation procedure will take a half hour. American and Soviet negotiators held their first working session of preliminary talks on strategic arms limitation in Helsinki. The talks in the Finnish capital are being held to set the stage for future substantive negotiations. U.S. Secretary of State William Rogers says there have been numerous diplomatic contacts with North Vietnam, but he said none of them have seemed to produce any progress toward a settlement of the war. President Nixon has asked Congress to enact a new law designed to increase trade and relax trade restrictions. The president also said a commission would be appointed to examine the entire range of U.S. trade policies. Joseph Kennedy, father of the late President John Kennedy, is dead at the age of 81. Condolences continue to pour into the family home at Hyannisport, Massachusetts, where the financier and former ambassador to Britain will be buried on Thursday following a funeral mass celebrated by Boston's Cardinal Cushing. And the U.S. Justice Department is investigating some persons involved in last weekend's anti-war demonstrations in Washington to determine if the federal anti-riot law was violated. The anti-riot law prohibits crossing a state line to incite violence. That's the news in brief. Jim Hamilton reporting from the Voice of America.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the descent and landing on the surface of the moon. The first maneuver, the undocking, took place about 25 minutes ago. This has been accomplished very successfully, and now, for at least another five more minutes, we will have the continuing separation of the two craft, the lunar landing craft Intrepid, and the mothership Yankee Clipper. Then we will have a further firing of the mother spacecraft, Yankee Clipper's thrusters, which should separate it up to about 2 nautical miles. Followed then an hour later by the descent orbit insertion, the firing, first firing of the Intrepid's big descent engine. But let's get an updated report now from the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
5 minutes and 46 seconds until ignition of the rocket for the separation maneuver.
You're going to be starting PDI about 5 miles north of track, and during the descent, you're going to be steering south.
Jerry Carr talking to Pete Conrad.
5 miles north of track, okay. As long as it knows it, it's okay with me.
The it there, I'm sure, refers to the lunar module. It, the Intrepid. But this separation maneuver by the command module will be a very short thrust, about 15 seconds.
Is this a firing of the reaction control system?
Houston, for, you try those primary servo electronics?
Bill, for just a 2 foot per second change in delta velocity, that would very certainly be the RCS system.
The very small thrusters on the command module.
Right.
Yeah, the antenna's not moving around at all. It appears to be locked on tight.
That's Al Bean. We're still looking at the Intrepid out the
Clipper, Houston, are
window.
You in now?
Through the television eye of the camera in the command module, we can still see Intrepid and the moon going by below. Just lost.
Dick, go back to manual.
Roger, we copy your auto, Dick. You're better off in manual.
They lost the signal briefly, and you
is
could hear
them.
Is it
still auto, Dick? It just locked up solid, if it is.
That's manual.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That's Pete Conrad looking out his window in Intrepid at Dick Gordon in the command module.
Pretty good when I got all this room.
That was Gordon. Having a little trouble keeping that high-gain antenna locked up on the command module. This has been happening for the last day or so. Part of the transponder system, which senses a signal coming up from the tracking stations on Earth, causes the four-dish array of the high-gain antenna to point back at that tracking dish on Earth. And this transponder and pointing system hasn't been working too accurately. They've actually used some secondary electronics on occasion to sort of boost it, and apparently this is not working too well. Dick is doing it manually now. As you can surmise from this description, there are several primary and backup modes of accomplishing all of these things. The TV picture is very sensitive to this high-gain antenna, and right now, out the lunar, we don't see the lunar module in that picture from the spacecraft hatch because Dick Gordon has apparently pointed it in a different direction. We believe we see the surface of the moon, however.
We keep mentioning the fact that we will have a separation maneuver in a few minutes, but actually the two vehicles have been separated almost 30 minutes, but a rather short distance.
That's right. This is to further remove the command module from the vicinity of the limb. You don't want the command module close by when Intrepid, the lunar module, fires its descent engine.
This is one of the better visuals I've seen, Dick.
That's Pete.
Yeah, you're right. I've been taking stills. I'm going to get out of view of the TV. I got to get you back.
Dick was taking still pictures with the Hasselblad camera, and the TV drifted off. So now he's going to get it back, he says. And we here on Earth.
I got you 1 minute and 40 seconds marked, Seth.
1 minute, 40 seconds till SEP, according to Pete's clock, and he's 7 seconds ahead of us here on the Earth, as a matter of fact. Let's see what Jerry Carr in Mission Control says to him on that. This isn't crucial anyway.
Clipper, Houston, you go for SEP.
There was the go from Jerry Carr in Mission Control. Dick Gordon replies, Roger. The timing on this is not crucial because the command module is in a passive mode. It's just going to move away slightly.
Intrepid Houston, give us a mark with 1 minute to go to SEP, would you?
They're checking the time.
It's already 1 minute. I'll give you one at 45 seconds.
His clock is ahead of us, and they're checking up on that fact.
Mark, 45 seconds.
He's about 8 seconds fast, according to us. Now, if the clock we're watching is synchronized with that in mission control, he's 8 seconds fast. So let's see what Jerry Carr says about that now. Dick Gordon.
Do you concur with that, Yankee Clipper?
I don't have average G yet, Pete.
Okay, I may have copied the time down wrong or something.
108, 24, 42.
Okay, 42. I got 22.
Average G
on that time.
Average G.
Very good.
The communications have been unusually good.
15 seconds. 15
okay,
seconds.
We'll be looking for you, too. Okay, there he goes. He's burning.
Their clocks are both just a bit ahead of what we have here on the ground. Dick Gordon's television camera still mounted in the window of the spacecraft.
Houston, you were off on that figure by 20 seconds. CSM was right.
Yeah, I had the wrong time. He's burning now, and he looks good out there.
Roger.
And now, as Dick Gordon burns his rocket engine, we can see the Intrepid come back into view.
Bye-bye.
Silhouetted. Dick Gordon said, burns complete. Pete Conrad said, bye-bye. Gordon said, so long, troops. And in our TV picture, coming from the spacecraft Yankee Clipper, we're watching the lunar module Intrepid drift away. It hasn't moved. It hasn't done a thing. It's been very passive, and all of these movements are coming from the Yankee Clipper itself.
And, of course,
Intrepid silhouetted against a black sky in the live TV picture coming from
Houston,
the Yankee
Clipper. You can terminate every scene now.
It's done.
The blackness
okay, Houston,
of space.
We're an up data link for you anytime you want to send us his state vector.
We'll be ready in about 3 minutes, Dean.
Okay, and meanwhile, I'm going to take the computer. Give me a holler when you're ready.
Roger.
I think Gordon's antenna has drifted off again because his picture's breaking up. I think that was a most dramatic little moment there. As Dick Gordon said, the burn is complete. Pete said, so long, troops.
And he'll move away by about 4 kilometers with that burn, will he not?
He'll continue to drift away very slightly.
Yes. Well, our next major maneuver will come in about an hour from now, the descent orbit insertion, the firing of that large descent engine on the lunar landing craft Intrepid. But I believe if I'm correct in looking at this flight plan, it will come while the Intrepid is on the backside of the moon, out of communication. Would you correct me on that if I'm wrong, gentlemen?
No, that's right,
indeed.
Phil.
Indeed.
It will be on the backside of the moon, and the reason for that is that it will take the least amount of energy to place it into an orbit that will put it at its low point on this side of the moon, right over the target.
Getting some noise in our communications.
Dick Gordon's high-gain antenna is still out of lock. It is still not locked in with the Earth. So we lost the live TV picture from his spacecraft, from the command module, as in that picture, the lunar module Intrepid appears to drift away. And I hope many of our listeners around the world were able to watch that. That was a very dramatic and exciting moment to us as he completed the separation maneuver and slowly drifted away. And Pete said, so long.
Were you able to see the flame of the thruster?
Oh, no, because all the thrusting was on the
command module, of course, yes.
With its small thrusters, and the camera was pointing out the cone-shaped window. That noise is... That's the noise from space of no signal. That's what it sounds like when we're not getting anything.
Bravo.
We got an instruction from Jerry Carr to Yankee Clipper to try an antenna called Omni Bravo. That's the second of two omnidirectional antennas. So we've lost the TV picture and communication briefly with Yankee Clipper, but I assume that Intrepid is still in touch should Pete Conrad say anything. We will be in touch with both spacecraft for about another 28 minutes before they swing around the moon to the left, to the west, as we look at it from Earth, out of touch. And then, as you heard us mention a moment ago, when they are exactly on the back side of the moon, just about 180 degrees around from the point of descent orbit burn, power descent, the final power descent, then that DOI, or descent orbit initiation burn, will be affected. Bill Land mentioned why that was so just a moment ago.
You know, this might be a good time to play back an interview that Rhett Turner did record it at Houston a short time ago with Pete Conrad, a discussion of this very important day, the descent from undocking, the descent down to the lunar surface. Let's listen to that now.
Pete, would you describe the events from power descent to touchdown, how you will be piloting the limb down to the surface?
All right. We are doing several things differently. If you remember, we had some communications problems on 11 because they went in face down. Now, we're going to start power descent face up. Of course, 26 seconds after the engine lights at 10% thrust, we throttle up to 100% thrust and we're face up.
In other words, you prefer to come in by instruments rather than being able to see the surface, right?
Well, we have the reason that they came in face down was two reasons. One, to run an altitude check by visual observance of features moving through a known angle for time, and also to give them some idea of their downtrack error. Now, it's essential that we maintain good communications because we're going to get our downtrack error information from relayed from the Earth based on their analysis at startup of the engine, at PDI initiate, by looking at what we call this LIR processor. And at 2 minutes into the burn, the ground is going to relay up what their best estimate is of the change in our landing site, and we're going to input that into our computer during the burn, which is a change. Now, I mentioned the altitude business. There's another way to determine your altitude at PDI with the rendezvous radar tracking the command module, and we're going to adopt that procedure rather than the visual observance. We feel that that's probably a more accurate check anyhow. So it's really not a question of going in by instruments. It's really a question of doing it by a different means. Now, we will also be able to observe the lunar surface by going inertially to the burn attitude right after DOI. We're actually heads down going forward in orbit at that portion of the moon right after the burn. So we'll see the lunar horizon in front of us go down through the window and disappear as our inertial attitude leaves us in the local horizontal position to the moon at the start of the burn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mentioned that at 2 minutes into the burn, we would input this information about the downrange error if it's there. And we do expect to see some, and so we expect to update the computer at 2 minutes into the burn. About 4 minutes into the burn, we should pick up our radar data and start updating the computer with the radar information. And then the next thing that we look for is throttle down of the big engine, and that comes at some 6 minutes and 40-some seconds into the flight, we get throttle down. And around 8 minutes into the burn, we should be approaching the high gate position, which is about 7,300 feet. And right after that, we get the pitch over and start the targeting for the low gate conditions, which is the hover point right over the landing site. And that's the point where I hope to start looking to see where we are and make the determination visually whether we're short or cross range, and either fly manually or input to the computer through the stick some changes in the landing site in order to get over to where the surveyor is.
Now, you have a bit more fuel capability and maneuvering capability during that final moment or so.
Well, we really don't have any more fuel, but we have changed the trajectory to use that fuel, I think, a little better than on 11. Now, we picked the trajectory on 11 to make it very optimum for pilot takeover just to achieve a landing. Now, I've accepted some things that we would normally, having never done it before, not wanted to do. But now that we've done it and I've spent a great deal of time talking to Neil, both spent a lot of time flying the LLTV, things like that, that it does not look bad to us to accept this other thing, which is a little higher sink rate, about 2 feet per second more at 500 feet than we had on Neil's trajectory. And this slight change there and a little greater horizontal velocity at 500 feet gives us a little more fuel to fly around manually. It's about 20 seconds worth, I think, all told. Plus, this limb is a lighter limb.
Well, the whole world will be listening very carefully with you, Pete, as you park that in your lot there. We hope that you get right on the spot you're headed for.
Thank you.
Good luck.
That an interview recorded a short time ago with Commander Pete Conrad of the Apollo 12 by correspondent Rhett Turner. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the descent and landing of the Apollo 12 on the surface of the moon. To bring you up to date, we have had separation about 12 minutes ago, the separation of the command module, Yankee Clipper, from the lunar landing craft Intrepid. In about 50 minutes from now, we will have the descent orbit insertion burn. That is the firing up of the big descent engine aboard the lunar landing craft Intrepid. The first firing of that engine, putting it into a large loping orbit, taking it down to within 50,000 feet or about 15,000 meters of the surface of the moon. And now let's get an updated report on events aboard both the Intrepid and the Yankee Clipper from correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
Yankee Clipper and Intrepid are now drifting apart very slowly. 21 minutes from now, they will both move around in their orbit to the west side of the moon, out of sight. And the first of the important maneuvers will be performed, descent orbit insertion, at 109 hours, 23 minutes into the flight. That's just less than an hour from now, about 50 minutes, roughly. And that will begin to cause Intrepid to go from some 110 kilometers above the surface down to about 50,000 feet. At that point, around within view of the Earth and well within tracking range will come that event which you heard Pete Conrad describing just a moment ago, PDI, Powered Descent Initiation, and we'll try to carry you through this very, very interesting new procedure in an attempt to perform a pinpoint landing right near the Surveyor spacecraft, at least to perform a landing right where you want to go, regardless of what happens to be there.
Well, Rhett Turner, we had the pleasure of, a short time ago, about a week or so ago, of talking with Cliff Charlesworth, who is one of the flight directors, and I believe he was the prime director, was he not, on Apollo 11?
He was indeed.
Is he the flight director at the moment on duty?
Both Cliff Charlesworth and Eugene Kranz are there in the mission control room. As we came on the air, I could see Jerry Griffin, who is the prime flight director, looking on also. All of them are interested in this. Both Charlesworth and Kranz are participating in working out this descent and touchdown. And that's something you talked, and we recorded some interesting conversation with Cliff about, as I recall.
And we'll be playing that tape, the tape-recorded interview, very soon. We have, I suppose, another 30 minutes or so of signal with
18 minutes.
18
minutes,
I'm behind time.
Okay. One thing I meant to mention was that... One thing I meant to mention was the fact that we're not hearing much from the men because they're very busy.
Are my lights?
Sure do.
Okay, your tracking light's on.
That's Gordon acknowledging he sees the tracking light on the lunar module, on Intrepid. And they're very busy working, and we have heard during the past few minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, quite a few bits of engineering and technical information going up relative to the spacecraft trajectory. This is part of the procedure being used in refining to the greatest accuracy possible exactly where that lunar module is. That's the thing they want to keep track of right now, more so than with the command module Yankee Clipper.
And who is the relay point, the capsule communicator on this?
The capsule communicator does all of the verbal relaying. Some of this was being done automatically into the computer through electronic transmission back through the Goldstone tracking station. Goldstone